Hey guys, it's Vinny B. Raider Nation In the Huddle is all about giving our fans the best opportunities in life. TAT is a new product that allows smokers to enjoy the sensations of smoking with zero tobacco and zero nicotine content. Finally, a cigarette you could feel good about, similar to Raider Nation rituals of winning championships. TAT offers the beyond nicotine experience with its beyond tobacco-based material in taste, smell, touch, sight, and sound without nicotine or tobacco. TAT offers a better option to completely remove nicotine intake without compromising the smoking experience. TAT, beyond tobacco. Raider Nation, get your free pack of TAT today at TriTAT.com.
Broadcasting live from the Raiders practice facility at the Intermountain Healthcare Performance Center, this is the premier destination for an inside look into the Las Vegas Raiders. You're in the huddle with Vinny Bonsignor and Lincoln Kennedy, presented by Tequila Embajador.
Well, one, the NFL is designed for everyone to go 8-8, you know, with the salary cap and the way things are set up, the rules on waiver wires and things like that. They want everyone to be as equal as possible, you know, and then who wants to spend the money to do other things and all that kind of stuff, right? And, trade draft picks away and all that. But, you know, you see teams try and separate themselves and, you know, you see other teams go the other way. And it's just, me and Hunter, you know, talk about it all the time, you know, could, you know, a team, you know, the worst team in the NFL, you know, lose to a college team. I'm like, there's no way. You know, you watch. I mean, what was it last year? We almost lost to the Jets, and then, you know, they beat the Rams, who's a playoff team. Like, you know, we want to say what we want to say, but any given week, if their game plan is on and they do their right thing, everybody can play with everybody.
Not only can everybody play with everybody, I think everybody's showing that they can play with everybody. This has been one of the more competitive NFL seasons that I can remember, at least through the first 8-9 games or so, in terms of nobody just completely lapping the field right now, nobody completely defining themselves as the team to beat. Everybody has had some rough patches. Everybody has hit the skids a little bit, including the Raiders right now. But you look at the standings and where the Raiders are sitting at 5-4 with 8 games left to play. And you look around the rest of the AFC, they're a half a game out of first place in the AFC and a half a game out of a playoff spot in the AFC as a whole. Nothing that's happened has denied them a chance to do anything that they want to do this season. All of their goals and objectives are still ahead of them, and there's plenty of time left to get back on track in terms of the wins and losses to make something special of this season. You're in the huddle with Vinny Bonsignor and Lincoln Kennedy. And Lincoln Kennedy, you just heard Derek Carr talking about how this league is kind of structured to create parity. And there's no doubt every rule in the book, the timing of everything from draft picks to who gets to pick who in the waiver wire process, it's all predicated on trying to make sure that whoever's on the bottom can rise to the top or close to the top as quickly as possible in order to create this kind of parity. I think we're really seeing that this year, Lincoln. How you doing, my man? I do not have Lincoln Kennedy right now. We will work on that for sure. But the long and end of it, what Derek was trying to say, and I thought, you know, said it well, was that, you know, there's parity in this league now more than ever. There's, talking to Rich Bisacci, the head coach, there's a lot of quarterbacks that are playing good football right now and they could get hot in a hurry. There's a lot of good players, a lot of good defenses. There's a great coaching in this league, and you have to be able to be efficient. You have to play clean football week in and week out. And if you don't, even if you're off just a little bit, you're liable to get beat by anybody. The Jacksonville Jaguars showed that by beating the Buffalo Bills. They're the worst team in the NFL. I guess the Detroit Lions are really the worst team in the NFL right now. But, you know, they've been in games. They've lost some heartbreakers to some pretty good teams, including the Baltimore Ravens, who are in second place right now in the AFC. So this is a week-to-week league with a whole bunch of good teams. Maybe not a great team, but that's hard to do, to be a great team with the way the rules are set up, with the way the salary cap is set up. We've seen, obviously, the Patriots have been a dynasty. I think the Kansas City Chiefs are trying to you know, mimic that a little bit. We'll see. They've had some struggles this year without question. But do we have Lincoln back yet? We'll try to get that figured out. But in the meantime, you know, just kind of talking to Derek Carr today and talking to Rich Bisaccia today and talking to Kenyon Drake and about, you know, how crazy this NFL season has been in terms of, you know, who's real, who's legitimate, who's a pretender. Is there anyone that's just going to, you know, jump out and say, hey, we're the team to beat? Well, it's hard to do when there's so many good teams and it's just such a competitive type of a situation. And the thing that I think fans sometimes do that I don't sense that the Raiders are doing by any stretch of the imagination is freaking out about it. You know, you have to quickly move on to the next game. You have to identify what you did wrong maybe in the last game. And I think the Raiders have done a pretty good job at least of doing that. Talking to Derek Carr today, you know, looking at the tape actually kind of creates some hope even in spite of a two-game losing streak. Why? Because as he said today, well, you know, you look at this and you look at that. If we just did both of those things, it'd be a different game, you know. And two of the areas that you really look at with the Raiders are penalties and turnovers. They've lost that battle these last 2 weeks. No secret, when you lose the turnover battle, when you lose the battle against the penalties, you're not putting yourself in the best possible position. And they're not good enough to overcome that. There's very few teams that are able to overcome not being on top of the penalty game and not being on top of the turnover game. It's just really hard to do. And so when the Raiders sit there and look at tape and say, if we just hadn't turned the ball over right there, or if we didn't commit a you know, false start on a third and one and a false start on a third and three that really sabotaged a couple of early drives, promising drives as well, you know, things can be a little bit different. And that's the fine line in this whole thing. It's what separates you from winning and losing. And right now, for whatever reason, the Raiders have kind of been on the wrong side of that ledger, ironically enough. And this is what gives the Raiders hope. They were on the right side of it just 2 weeks ago. Or right before the break, when they won their last two games before the breaks in as convincing a fashion as they've won two games in a long time. It's there. They have it in them. They just haven't been able to maintain that poise. They just haven't been able to maintain their composure for whatever reason these last 2 weeks. Is it frustrating? Yes. Is it maddening? Absolutely. If you're a fan, do you want to bang your head up against a wall? Absolutely. I'm sure you do. But as you sit here and really, as Rich Bisaccia talked about it, not necessarily looking at it things through the telescope and getting too far out in front of you, you know, where do you need to be? What do you got to do to get there? All that stuff in the big broad picture. Look at things in a microscope and you look at that AFC right now. And you look at the standings right now, and I'm just going to repeat, the Raiders are a half a game out of first place in their division, and the other team, the team ahead of them, has played one more game. And they're a half a game out of a playoff spot in the AFC. And even in that case, there's a couple of teams that have played one extra game to them. So you do the math, and it's not far off whatsoever. This isn't, and I wrote this today in the Las Vegas Review Journal. You could always read my stuff. You know, I cover the Raiders for the Las Vegas Review Journal. Just go over to download our app, Vegas Nation, or go to VegasNation.com. You'll catch all the work that I do. Ed Graney, Adam Hill, Heidi Fang, Cassie Soto, Sam Gordon, the whole team over there at Vegas Nation. But you look at these standings, you look at what the Raiders have done, some of their high water marks this year, and you look at what I wrote today in terms of this isn't a manpower situation. This isn't a talent deficiency. You know, are the Chiefs the better offense? Do they have, you know, maybe a better offensive line right now and maybe more, you know, established weapons? Maybe, you know, the Chiefs, you could say, are a better team, but it's not like outlandishly so. And that it hasn't been the case, you know, for the Raiders in this year in terms of the talent gap is just so wide and so overwhelming that they don't have a chance. It's not that. They just need to play clean football week in and week out. And if they do, they're liable to beat anybody, or they're capable of beating anybody. And if they don't, just like everyone else in this league, they're capable and liable of losing if they don't play the clean, efficient style of football. We're going to go out to the Raider Nation listener line. Passionate Raider is online. How you doing, man?
The people that were shot, two of whom were shot.
Hey, Passionate Raider.
Hello?
Hey, I got you, brother.
Oh, okay, what's up? What's up, Vinny?
How you doing,
man? Hey, man. Turned on this morning at work. I get on, you know, I don't really catch your show too much. It's a little bit later at night. I'm usually raided out by 6 o'clock at night. You know, I'm giving it a good 10 hours every day, listening all day long, chiming in. But, man, Lincoln hit it hard last night, man. And you know, that's how I feel. It's like, how do we as fans and as players on the side see this stuff happening, but Carr and Olsen can't see the same things we see? How is it so hard for them to know that, okay, this is the strengths that Derek has, this is the weaknesses, and as the game's going on, why is it so hard for them to adjust?
What are we talking about here?
The offense, the ball, our line, the things that Lincoln was talking about last night. Same things Lincoln was talking about with the O-line and Derek and the plays and hitting the receivers in stride instead of missing open plays and breaking plays instead of hitting that third and three. You make it a third and eight, then you hit a three-yard checkdown. You know, like, how do we see all this stuff?
They see it. Yeah, no, they definitely see it. And you know, I understand where Lincoln's coming from, and that, you know, the check down on the third and eight is definitely that was a frustrating play. But
it's deeper than that. It's just it's way, because it's just like year four of number four running this offense, and it's like, man, we should have a way better product on the field by now.
I mean, I still think that, you know, if you look at the statistics, the Raiders' offensive line is not very good compared to the rest of the league. It's not. Their run game has suffered as a result, and that's just the reality of the situation. Okay, so they haven't been able to get their offensive line completely in order, and that's just a fact. Go look at every measurement where this Raiders' offensive line is ranked in run blocking and where it's ranked in pass blocking. And Lincoln will be the first to admit it all starts up front. And right now, the Raiders' offensive line has not been a strength. It's been adequate these last couple of weeks, or at least when they were winning, but it's not been the strength that you need an offensive line to be in, both in execution and in poise. Too many turnovers. They've got three offensive linemen that are in top eight in penalties. You can't have that. So when you're talking about Derek Carr has nothing to do with that right there, number one. Number two, with a shaky run game, to say the least, that's hard to do and operate an efficient offense when you can't run the ball consistently. Nevertheless, you look at the Raiders' pass game, I want to say it's number two in the NFL. In spite of a bad offensive line, in spite of a running game that has not offered any support, in spite of losing Henry Ruggs now, you know, we saw that. So, you know, you want to blame the quarterback, go ahead, and that's fine. That's your right. It's Lincoln's right as well. But I look at this offense, and I'm like, he's still not the problem. Derek Carr isn't the issue. To me, if you're looking for why the Raiders haven't been able to get off to faster starts and why they haven't been efficient, especially these last couple of weeks, it's because, you know, A, he had a bad game against the New York Giants. It's the one game where I can honestly say Derek Carr didn't play well. He'll admit that as well. But every other game, including on Sunday against the Kansas City Chiefs, he hasn't been the problem. And so it's easy to look at the quarterback. It's easy to blame him. But then when you take just a little bit deeper look at what he's working with right now offensively, it's not as easy as you think to be as good as he's been. And he's been very good for the most part. Get that offensive line working better, get a better and more consistent run game. And I think this offense, becomes even more efficient, and that also obviously helps Derek Carr. But right now he's operating without either, and that's just the fact of the matter. Just look at where this offensive line is ranked, look at where the run game is ranked, and it's hard to still do what they're doing offensively in spite of those two flaws. Back out to the Raider Nation listener line. D is in Portland. How you doing, D?
Hey, Vinny. How you doing?
Good, man.
Thanks for taking my call. Hey, so, kudos to Lincoln. I feel like he spoke for a lot of the fans, and he usually doesn't do that. He looks at it. I appreciate his insights, but yeah, a lot of passion last night.
For sure.
Yeah. Hey, so this is more of a thing I wanted to kind of highlight, that you harken back to the beginning of the season, which gives me a lot of hope, at least for as a 30-plus year Raider supporter. But you talked a lot about the schedule, and especially at the beginning, how it was an opportunity to own a lot of tiebreakers. So when you look at the schedule now and how it's compacted, they still control their destiny very much so, especially when you look at the wild card, right? They get the Bengals, they get the Browns, they get the Colts. You know, you get a lot of head-to-heads, and I think with a lot of these matchups, they're pretty even matched. These are evenly matched teams overall. So it's going to come down to who makes the least amount of mistakes, and really who executes, like Derek Carr was saying. So it's just some perspective. I know as fans, sometimes we hit the panic buttons, but we're still 5-4. We're still in it. You know, I think this week's going to be massive, though. It's going to set the tone for the next 8 games. I'm not expecting us to go 8-0, but if you're going 5-3, you're feeling pretty good.
Yeah, and it would actually make them 6-4 if they win. If they win on Sunday, that makes them 6-4. And as we talked about yesterday, even if the Raiders get to 6-5 with 8 with 6 games left to play, they're really right in they obviously would love to be in a better position than that. But at 6-5, if they split these next 2 games, beat the Bengals and see what happens against the Dallas Cowboys. But worst, if they beat the Bengals, worst case scenario, they get to 6-5 to start that last 6 games of the season. It's going to put them in great position to do what they need to do to get to the playoffs. Now, you mentioned, and it was a great point, the AFC and the wild card. They have the tiebreaker against the Pittsburgh Steelers. They've got the tiebreaker against the Baltimore Ravens. They play the Indianapolis Colts. They play the Cleveland Browns, two teams that are also going to be in this playoff race and are in this playoff race. They also get another head-to-head with the Kansas City Chiefs, and they get another head-to-head with the Los Angeles Chargers and the Denver Broncos, who are kind of lurking back there as well. So if they can take care of business in the right sort of way, there's no reason why, whether they're 7-4 to start the last 6 game stretch or 6-5, they're going to be in good position to make a run. And it boils down to not so much what the other team is doing or what the other team has or anything like that. It's how are the Raiders going to execute? How are they going to play in those games? We've seen them in their high water marks really be able to just level people. They leveled the Philadelphia Eagles, who have turned out to be a pretty decent team themselves, especially these last few weeks. They leveled the Denver Broncos, who, oh, by the way, went to Dallas and handled the Dallas Cowboys. So they've shown what they're capable of doing, and they've shown what they can be when they're playing at a clean level. But that's just kind of gotten away from them these last 2 weeks, and I think the belief in that locker room is they're still capable of getting back to that clean level of football. It's just being more poised, being more disciplined. And if they can get that back, again, I believe that they're going to be in a good spot as the rest of this season unfolds. We're going to go out to Tucson, where Raul is in Tucson. How you doing, brother? Raul in Tucson. How you doing, man?
Hey, I'm good, brother. Can you hear me, Vinny?
I got you, man. Thank you.
Yeah, man, thanks for taking my call. I've been loving all the content you guys have been putting out, and really enjoyed Lincoln's rant yesterday, man. It was just something I think we're all feeling, watching the game. I don't pretend as, I watch it as a fan. Obviously these coaches are a lot smarter than me, X's and O's wise, but I think as a fan, it's just so frustrating that when things go bad for this team and on the biggest stage, it's everywhere, man. Everywhere collapses. And I just cannot wrap my mind around when you just go in there with so much positivity and thinking this is the performance, that they're going to give us on a national stage. And it's really demoralizing, man. And you can see it. It's either one side of the ball or the other that's just killing the team. They can never just play together as a team. And I don't know, man, your thoughts. Like, why do you think that happens so much with this team?
Yeah, it's hard to put a finger on. By the way, the Raiders are second in the NFL in passing yards per game at 298. So say what you want to say about Derek Carr, but when you consider the fact that this offensive line has not, aside from Colton Miller, it's been spotty. It hasn't been great at all. They're starting to play a little bit better, but they're nowhere near where the Raiders need them to be. And that's hurt a running game, which has been spotty at best and non-existent this past week. So in spite of that all, Derek Carr is still, you know, helping this team throw for the second most yards per game in the NFL. He's doing a pretty good job. As far as the question, Raul, I hate to be cliche about this or kind of give the easy answer, but at least from my vantage point, and I've seen every game, I've seen every play of every game this year, when the Raiders are playing clean, efficient football in terms of the penalties and the turnovers, they put themselves in a really good position to win. Why? Because they've got good football players. They've got talent. They've got the necessary ingredients. It's when they've these untimely, kind of like Lincoln said, you know, I'm not going to use the verbiage that he used, but you know, the mistakes that they make at the time that they make them are so critical and so damaging. We talked about the fumble by DeSean Jackson. It's not putting the game on DeSean Jackson whatsoever. It's a play in a game, but at a critically big moment. It's 24-14 at that point with 3.5 or so minutes left in the third quarter. The Raiders had gotten down on the 13-yard line thanks to that pass and catch by DeSean Jackson, and nobody feels worse than DeSean about what happened next. But you can't fumble it in that situation. If he holds on to it, and let's just play it out that the Raiders score a touchdown right there, it's 24-21 with about 2 minutes left in the third quarter. That's it's the difference between that and then what happened next. You know, the Chiefs go down and kick a field goal. Now it's 27-14. And even that point, it's just a 13-point game. But I could see, you could visibly see the defense just, it was deflated. They have to go run back out on the field and defend right there after the Raiders really and rightfully should have held, you know, should maybe score a touchdown. But you go back to the first quarter, first and second quarter, they're driving into Chiefs territory. They're at the 47-yard line on a nice drive, 0-0 game, scoreless game, facing a 4th-and-1. They got their, you know, the look that they wanted with Marcus Mariota out there. But the ball never gets snapped to Marcus Mariota. It's a false start. Now, instead of 4th-and-1, it's 4th-and-6. Of course, you got to punt the ball in that situation. The Chiefs get it. They score a touchdown. Instead of the Raiders having the lead and forcing the Chiefs to play catch-up, now it's the Raiders who have to play catch-up. Then, in I want to say it was a 7-7 game, maybe it was 10-7 Chiefs. Again, the Raiders are scoring. They've got a nice, manageable 3rd-and-3. And what happens? Brandon Parker, false start. Brandon Parker, a 3rd-and-3 becomes a 3rd-and-8. And it changes the complexion. It changes what the Raiders are able to do in terms of their play menu. It changes how the Kansas City Chiefs can now defend that. 3rd-and-8 compared to 3rd-and-3, it's a big difference. They're not able to convert the first down. They got to punt it. And I want to say that the Chiefs scored again. You just can't do that. I think they had 21 plays in the first half. And they had, I think Bisaccia talked about today, 4 or 5 drives or of 7 or few plays in that first half. You can't have that. And it's all because of penalties and turnovers and just untimely plays. And if they can get back to what they were doing the previous two games against the Philadelphia Eagles and the Denver Broncos, where they played clean football and gave themselves a chance, look what happened. They dominated both of those games. So it's sometimes the easy answer is the answer. Just execute better. It isn't a talent situation. The Raiders are just as good as, they're better than the New York Giants. They're probably better overall than the Cincinnati Bengals. But it's going to come down to, again, can you execute in a clean, efficient manner? When they do, they set themselves up for pretty good things. When they don't, They're liable to get beat by anybody, as is anybody in the NFL. You're in the huddle with Vinny Bonsignore and Lincoln Kennedy, brought to you by Tequila Embajador, Raider Nation Radio, 920 AM on a Wednesday.
Interact with the show. Text Vinny at 69187 or tweet at him at Vinny Bonsignore. This is In the Huddle with Raiders beat writer Vinny Bonsignore on Raider Nation Radio 920 AM.
We're going to go right out to the Raider Nation guest line and welcome in Ben Baby. He covers the Cincinnati Bengals for ESPN. Ben, thanks for spending some time with us in the huddle. How are you doing, my friend?
Hey, doing well. How are y'all doing?
Doing good, doing good. All right, I got to ask you, Ben. And we can't, you know, Raider Nation is Raider Nation. So I'm not going to say the Who Day Nations because I get yelled at and screamed at by Raider Nation when I say any other nation. So among the fan base in Cincinnati for the Bengals, how much of there is they're ecstatic to be 5-4 at this point, given everything that's happened to this franchise the last few years, you know, in a recent path, they just haven't been very good. Or how pissed off are they that they're at 5-4 after losing two straight games? What is it in terms of where Bengal fans look at this organization right now?
Yeah, you know, I think that when you look at it right now, especially the way the Bengals went into the bye week, I think there's more of a sour taste than anything. Because, you know, they were sitting there. I think they were at the number one seed in the AFC. Granted, it was like week six, so that doesn't even matter. But fans are really excited about kind of where they were at. And then all of a sudden, they go out and they lay a clunker against the Jets and they get blown out by the Browns, who were just dealing off all the Odell stuff. So I think that it's a lot going into it. But all in all, when you look at how the season has progressed, I think most people, including those inside the building, are happy that they're 5-4 right now and really in the thick of the playoff race when you look at it the last couple of years. They haven't really been in the playoff picture at all. So right now, you know, the stakes have never been higher for Zach Taylor in his coaching tenure here.
Well, I cover a football team that has been on a bit of a roller coaster ride itself. And so I know not to read too much into the highs or necessarily too much into the lows. But when you look at what the Bengals are doing prior to this two-game losing streak, and then you look at the two-game losing streak, who are they closer to being? The 41-16 losers to the Cleveland Browns, or the team that beat the Bengals 41-17?
Yeah, you know, that's a great question. I think the truth is probably somewhere in the middle, to be quite honest. And I know that's probably a cop-out answer here. But, you know, when you look at it, I think the team probably isn't as good as we saw against Baltimore, but I don't think they're also as bad as they were against Cleveland. And really, I'm not sure what to make of this AFC North when you look at it, all things considered. You know, the Bengals right now, this will be their first game against the AFC West. And I think, you know, these games, these cross-divisional games, are really going to decide who comes out of the North and makes the playoffs. And, you know, will the AFC North get one seed or two seeds right now? For me, that's the big question. You know, are they deep enough and good enough? And I know it sounds crazy given the history of the division, but can they produce two teams and get a wild card team in? I think is a very serious question when you look at kind of how inconsistent the division has been as a whole. You know, Baltimore's been shaky throughout the season. You know, Pittsburgh, you know, we have to wonder where they're at as Ben Roethlisberger appears to be, you know, on his last legs. And in Cleveland, you know, they're, you know, one week they go out and they blow out the Bengals, who have shown to be a pretty decent team, and then they turn around and get smacked by the Patriots. So, you know, it is a very topsy-turvy division. But, you know, I think the Bengals are probably a little bit closer to the team that blew out the Ravens, but I don't think – I think that was a very special performance. And right now, you know, it remains to be seen if they can reach that.
We're talking to Ben Baby from ESPN. He covers the Cincinnati Bengals for ESPN, and you can follow him at Ben_Baby. Ben, let's start with the quarterback. Joe Burrow was the first pick overall 2 years ago, or 2020. Obviously gets hurt toward the end of the year, so you know, his rookie year got sabotaged a little bit. He's a kid from Ohio. From what I understand, I think he did grow up a Cincinnati Bengals fan. He wants to be there. It's meant to be, it sounds like, and it seems like this is where he wants to be. His progress, especially coming off the devastating knee injury, is there surprise about how quickly he got it back together and the season that he's putting together this year? Or is the belief that he's exactly where everybody expected him to be at this point?
Yeah, you know, it's a good question. And to start off, I believe he was actually a Browns fan,
given
where he was at, which is actually funny because, you know, that's, you know, a Chief Bengals rivalry. And I think because I know he loved LeBron and the Cavs and all that. But all things considered, nobody was really surprised that he was ready to go at the start of camp and really participated throughout OTAs, mini camp, and then training camp. You know, someone described, you know, Joe as an animal in the rehab process and how aggressively he attacked everything. And so, you know, what we've seen so far isn't a surprise. I think as the season has progressed, he's become more comfortable back there in the pocket. You know, he looks like he's moving around a lot better than he was early on in the year. He's willing to take a lot of risks, both on the ground and through the air. And so I think that's been interesting. You know, for me, you know, we just wrote about this on ESPN.com, just published today. You know, Burrow's interception rate is, you know, particularly high. In fact, one of the highest in the NFL. And last year, he was actually one of the best in the NFL and not throwing interceptions per pass attempt. And I, you know, talking to people inside the building and trying to figure it out, looking at the numbers, and I think the progression we're seeing right now out of Burrow is maybe a willingness to test and see what kind of windows he can fit in the NFL. He spent a lot of time this offseason training with Jordan Palmer, his quarterback's coach, and working on improving his velocity. And I have to wonder that when you look at how many attempts he has into tight windows of a yard or less, he leads the NFL in 60 attempts. I wonder if he's trying to see, you know, test those limits and kind of see where that progression lies. Because, you know, he had a, on an interview last week, he made an interesting point. He said those are the kind of windows you're going to have in the NFL. And so I think right now that's the progression we're seeing out of him. You know, where is he? Can he be an explosive playmaker? Because, you know, when you talk to people and you look at the numbers, you know, they suggest that he wants to be a dynamic playmaker, and he knows he's got to be that for this team to be successful.
You know, quarterbacks have a tendency to become faces of the franchise, faces of the city that they play in. And I know, in spite of some of the struggles that the Cincinnati Bengals have had, they're so huge in Southern Ohio and that city in particular, obviously. Where is he falling in terms of the star pecking order in Cincinnati? I know Joey Votto over there with the Reds has a big hold on that area. But where's Joe Burrow ranking among, and how quickly has he ascended to one of the faces of that part of the country?
Yeah, you know, it'd be hard to say he's not the face of Cincinnati sports. I mean, and honestly, it was that way before they even got him. You know, I joked, you know, everyone asked me, you know, what I thought was going to happen pre-draft. I said, honestly, we may have riots in Cincinnati if the Bengals don't draft Burrow. I think when you saw what he did in that 2019 season at LSU, going from, you know, a potential mid-round pick to leading LSU to an undefeated season, a national championship, winning the Heisman, setting all sorts of records. And, oh, by the way, he's just from a couple hours away in Southeast Ohio. You know, I think that there was a lot of things that made the fan base really like him. And he's somewhat of a blue-collar guy as well. I know he's the son of a defensive coordinator, and his mom's a principal as well. But, you know, at his core, I think, you know, they're very much a blue-collar family, and he's a guy who kind of embodies the region really well. And I think he, you know, is well-suited. And, you know, I wrote this in a feature, you know, on ESPN before the draft. And I think that, you know, Burrow is uniquely suited to kind of carry the sporting burden, so to speak, of Cincinnati. We're talking about a team that hasn't made, you know, won a playoff game since 1991. That's well before Burrow was born. I think it's even before I was born by a few months. And there's a lot of pressure on not only the franchise, but whoever is the leader of this franchise to kind of bring Cincinnati out of this muck. And as a whole, the city really just hasn't had a lot of postseason success, the Reds included. And so I think Burrow is fully aware of that. And I think that's something he relishes, and it's something he wants to turn around. And I think that's why the city has embraced him the way that it has. And, you know, so far, you know, I think that he's definitely the premier athlete. Now, granted, we only have two major sports teams of the Big Four. The MLS, but you know, right now, I think Burrow has definitely got a good stronghold on the city, and the city backs him.
Nice flex on how you're still in the very much the prime of your life, Ben. I liked it. I like how you snuck in there on your birthday. So that was good. All right. So we sometimes, you know, in the media, sometimes as fans, you know, we get on athletes when they're, you know, not being truthful. And I have a weird question here for you. Earlier during training camp, Ja'Marr Chase was asked an honest question about making the transition from college to pro football, and he gave a absolutely honest answer about the footballs are different. They just feel a little bit differently. The size might be a little bit different. It's just a different football going from college to the NFL, and he was honest and forthright about make a little bit of transition to that football. And he got just blown up. I'm sitting back here going, okay, what's the big deal? I mean, he's being honest about it. I'm not thinking that he's not going to be able to conquer that. He's just telling the truth. What was that all about, the reaction, number one? And number two, I kind of think that he's put that one behind him pretty easily.
Yeah, you know, so first off, let's just go ahead and set the record straight on a lot of things. I just turned 30, and I just left the gym. My back's aching. My knees are creaking today with leg day. Like, I'm going to be hurting in the morning. So I don't know if I'm in the prime of my life anymore. I'll let you know in the morning. And then secondly, with the Jamar thing, you know, it was really fascinating to watch the discourse because, to be honest, you know, the drops were something that we noticed as soon as he arrived in town. It, you know, we kind of, you know, kept tabs on it, didn't make a big deal out of it, you know, among the press corps. And we said, you know, it's really, you know, when you look at it, I think it's a little irresponsible to say, oh, yeah, this is a big deal. I mean, I feel like that's an overreaction. We'll see. Let's wait how his training camp progresses, the preseason progresses. And sure enough, you know, it became kind of an issue. And then, you know, once the games hit, then it really started to become more pronounced. And it was something the coaching staff even, you know, sat him down and showed him, you know, tape of his footage and said, hey, you know, we know you can be the guy at LSU, not the guy who's been having these struggles in these preseason games. And, you know, the ball quotes were really, you know, fascinating. I thought that, you know, I think someone asked for clarification on what the big difference in the ball was when he referenced the change. But honestly, I thought it was just someone trying to process kind of the yips, so to speak, because, you know, his start had been so bizarre. And I think nobody really could put the finger on it, even inside the building, as to why he was having the drop issues that they were. And a lot of people just thought it was a bunch of local beat hacks in Cincinnati making up some narrative. Like, that is the furthest thing from the truth. I think it was definitely something he had to address, and anybody you talk to understands that. I think they all thought that he would break out of that slump, and sure enough, he has. But that being said, he's definitely slowed down these last couple of weeks. You know, I'm curious to see what he looks like after the bye week. I think defenses now are making it a point to shut down Jamar Chase and really make Joe Burrow find other receivers. And, you know, Cincinnati has other good receivers in Tyler Boyd and T. Higgins, two guys who at various times have been the number one receiver here over the last few years. And I think both are very comfortable being in that role and are capable playmakers in different ways. So, you know, I think seeing how this target share is going to look like coming out of the bye week, seeing what the offense is capable of is going to be fascinating. But Jamar right now, I think, is a proven commodity. He's a guy who can be an immediate and explosive playmaker. And that's why the Bengals drafted him with the 5th overall pick.
I covered Zach Taylor when he was with the Los Angeles Rams as an assistant coach under Sean McVay, and I remember, and I might have even mentioned this to Sean if I remember correctly. Like, he was their quarterback coach. I was like, this guy's like quarterback coach. He's like way overqualified for this, and it was like, yeah, I know. It's great, isn't it? You know, so but you knew that he was going to be on a track to bigger and better things. He gets his opportunity with the Cincinnati Bengals. Obviously, it's a tough job to go in there and get that thing turned around. But it sure seems like he has them on the right track. What's been the reception for Zach Taylor as the head coach of the Bengals?
Yeah, I'll tell you what. There's been a lot of pressure on him in the city to turn things around. And I think that it's been very clear going into 2021 that this was going to be a make or break year for him. You know, it's been a couple of years. I think everybody understands where they were at in the rebuild process. You know, as soon as, you know, things started to go south in 2019 and people really had their eyes open on what the state of the roster was and what was required for it to be really, really competitive, I think people understood that it was going to take a couple of years, and then you get Burrow in there and Taylor's second year. But this third year, I think, was really going to show where the franchise is at moving forward and frankly, whether Zach was going to be the right guy to kind of during this current phase. And they started out really well. They went 5-2 in their first 7 games, you know, and then fell backwards, you know, with a couple losses. And that's what makes this Raiders game so fascinating. I think, you know, if you're Cincinnati, you really can't afford, you know, to really lose any of these next 3 games against, you know, the Raiders, the Steelers, and the Chargers when you're looking to compete in a very, you know, even AFC North, so to speak. Even if it may not be great, it's still very much even, and every team's kind of in the thick of it. But I think there's definitely going to be some pressure on Taylor and his coaching staff to go out and to show, you know, that they are the team they were at the beginning of the season, and things are looking, you know, trending upward for Zach. And I think the fan base is getting a little antsy, and they want to see some tangible progress and what that looks like because of the hot start. You know, will they be happy with 8-9 or 9-8 or not making the playoffs, or does this need to be a playoff year? And I've always said that, you know, I think for the Bengals, what they really want to do is be in the thick of it in December. And right now, I mean, they're a few weeks away from doing that. So, you know, right, you know, it's going to be really fascinating to see how this shakes out, but there's definitely going to be a lot of pressure on Zach, and Zach is fully aware of that. And I think if you ask him, which I have, he says that, you know, it's no different than it was when he first started.
Last question for you, Ben. I think the offense seems to be, anyway, a little bit ahead of the defense. It happens like that. It's hard to rebuild an entire roster on the fly in the NFL and only have a certain amount of draft picks, finite money under the salary cap, et cetera, et cetera. But how has the defense progressed in light of what's happening on the offense?
Yeah, you know, what's interesting is that I think the defense, to be honest with you, has been ahead of the offense throughout much of the season, you know, the last 2 weeks, you know, notwithstanding. You know, the defense has really played very well, and we're talking about pressure. I don't know if there was any more pressure in Cincinnati on anyone but Lou Anarumo, the defensive coordinator, after, yep, you know, the defense struggled for the last couple of years. And I got to give Lou and Zach in the front office a lot of credit. I think that, you know, there could have been some moves made in the offseason and that would have been justified, but they stuck with Lou, and he turned around and fielded a very good defense through the first seven games. Now, the last couple of weeks, they had struggled a little bit, and I think it's going to be on them to kind of adjust and kind of find where teams are hitting their weaknesses, specifically, you know, over the middle of the field in pass coverage. I think has been something that they've struggled with these last couple of weeks, and with their linebackers getting decimated by injury and COVID and all these things, I think that's only going to be tested even further. But by and large, you know, the offense has really put the defense in tough situations because the offense has been unable to sustain drives, and the defense has had so many more snaps on it than the offense has had, and I wonder if that's why things, you know, maybe slowed down a little bit. And so, you know, the bye week, you know, no coach is ever going to tell you the bye week comes at a bad time. So every time someone says it comes at a good time, of course it is, because they're not going to say anything else. But truly, you know, I think the Bengals needed a little break because of, you know, how many snaps were on that defensive side of the ball. And just like we said, there's going to be pressure on Zach. I think there's going to be pressure on Lou. And a lot of guys have been brought in over these last two off seasons to rehab this defense. And can they go out and play like they did early in the year? Because you're talking about a same group, you know, that befuddled Lamar Jackson has played very well in spurts. And I think we'll continue to be tested, especially now that you're going up against the West, which I think is a very good division.
Yeah, I agree. And the Raiders and Cincinnati Bengals will arrive at Allegiant Stadium on Sunday in exactly the same place at 5-4, both wanting to kind of get back on track and position themselves to make runs for something important in December. Ben, thanks so much for spending some time with us in the huddle. Safe travels to Las Vegas, and we'll see you when you get out here, my man.
Yeah, I'm excited. I'll tell you what, you know, it's going to be a big weekend. There's also going to be Bud Crawford fighting Sean Porter at Mandalay Bay on Saturday night for the welterweight championship. I'll be at that. That'll be on ESPN pay-per-view. So it should be a great sports weekend in Vegas. I'm looking forward to it.
There's been a few of those here. I moved here from Los Angeles about a year and a half ago, and I got to say, I am impressed. Like, every weekend there's something going on. So enjoy the fight. I'm definitely getting that as well. So we'll be doing the same thing Saturday night, Ben. Have a good one, man.
Sounds good. Take care.
You got it. That's Ben Baby from ESPN. He covers the Cincinnati Bengals and apparently boxing as well. Didn't catch if he was going there as a reporter, as a fan, but either way, I'm sure he's going to have a great time. You're in the huddle with Vinny Bonsignor and Lincoln Kennedy, brought to you by Tequila Embajador, Raider Nation Radio 920 AM on a Wednesday.
Interact with the show. Text Vinny at 69187 or tweet at him at Vinny Bonsignor. This is In the Huddle with Raiders beat writer Vinny Bonsignor on Raider Nation Radio 920 AM.
Yeah, the woe is me. Guy showing up late to the building. You know, here we go again. That kind of mindset. And I think I think it was Josh or Paul, I can't remember who asked, but sorry for forgetting. But I remember saying that these guys are different, you know, why do I think that we can finish better? This group is different. You know, I came in this morning and, you know, usually when I would, in the past, I would show up and I wouldn't see guys for a little while. You know, I show up in the morning and guys are in there, you know, guys are showing up there, that we're walking at the same time. And it's not, you know, Pat Hill used to say bright eyed and bushy tailed, you know, they're on fire, ready to go. Let's fix it. You know, no one wanted to go out. Trust me, we didn't do it on purpose. You know, we didn't go out there and, you know, lose to those guys the way we lost to them, you know, the last 2 weeks, you know, because we weren't trying. You know, like, we've been trying to get it right. But the thing that separates this team, I think, is we did it twice in a row. And when we came in this week, everybody's like, nope, let's go. Whereas in the past, I would see some of this falling off kind of stuff. And that's just being honest, calling it is what it is.
quarterback Derek Carr, talking about some of the differences that he sees in this version of the Raiders compared to some Raiders teams of the past, specifically last year and the year before, when they had second half collapses that sabotaged playoff hopes and playoff dreams. And of course, after a 2-game losing streak, he's going to get asked, well, are we looking at the same thing from you guys this year that we saw the last couple of years? You know, what's the deal here? And he can only speak from his own experiences and his own perspective. And by the way, you're in the huddle with Vinny Monster and Lincoln Kennedy, brought to you by Tequila Embajador, Raider Nation Radio, 920 AM. Lincoln Kennedy's taking a day off today. He'll be back hopefully, I think, tomorrow on Thursday. But so from Derek Carr's perspective, and you know, he's the leader of the team, and he's the quarterback, and he's got his finger on the pulse of this team as he has for other teams in the past. And you know, basically what he was saying was, in years past, you know, when a skid would happen, which it's invariably gonna happen during the course of a year, unless you're, you know, an undefeated team or a team that's lost one game, typically you're gonna have a rough patch. If it doesn't always result in losses, it results in struggles and bad play, and you understand that you got to get it fixed. The Rams team that I covered, you know, the year that they went to the Super Bowl, last four games of the season, they're sitting pretty. They're sitting in great shape. Two straight losses where they got their hats handed to them. And in the process, they lost Todd Gurley. And, you know, I remember Sean McVay was at the Coliseum. It was, I think it was a Sunday or a Monday night game against the Philadelphia Eagles, who rolled into the Coliseum and kind of waylaid the Rams. They handled them. They were physically dominant. The Rams were making a bunch of mistakes. They couldn't run the ball. They were getting set. It was just a bad performance for the second straight week. And you know, Sean McVay said, "We're going to get this thing figured out." And on the fly, without Todd Gurley, they go out and sign a guy off the street to play running back. Got back to their roots. Got back to their who they were. Ran the heck out of the ball to go beat the Denver Broncos and the San Francisco 49ers, and then they rolled with that recipe. They got back on track and rolled with that recipe to the Super Bowl. Even in that year, a great Rams team, they had a stretch where, who the heck are these guys? And when you talk about, it's more about the Raiders than it is about the other teams, I truly believe that. That's what I see. I don't see the way it was last year or the year before, where last year that defense was just so bad. I know you got, Vinny, they gave up 41 points against the Kansas City Chiefs. I know, I get that. But that was a competitive game going into the fourth quarter. After that turnover, you know, in the third quarter on the fumble with the Raiders going in for a potential touchdown to cut it to a 3-point game. Sometimes there's things that happen in a game like that where it's just too much, and it's hard to, as the defense, to go back out there after they had been on the field quite a bit up till that point and still play, you know, at your highest level. It's just, these guys are human beings. No excuses, but it is what it is. But from my vantage point, I just feel like this team is just better. Talent-wise, it's just better, especially on defense. We'll see if they can get it back on track after what happened on Sunday. But from Derek's perspective, you know, when the Raiders of the past would hit a skid, which teams normally do at some point, it would be, oh, woe is me. Oh, here we go again. Oh, and all of a sudden guys are kind of checking out a little bit. Nobody blatantly quit the last couple of years. But when you start showing up a little bit later and a little bit later to start your work day at the facility, that kind of shows a little bit of checking out a little bit. It might just be a little bit, but at this level, a little bit is a lot a bit. Trust me, these guys are too damn good across the league for anyone to kind of come in there a little bit off from what your best is. Whereas this year, talking to Derek, and again, this is his perspective, his opinion, his watching players and, you know, studying his teammates and watching them on a daily basis. There hasn't been yet any of the woe is me or showing up late. He shows up to work. Everybody's there. They're showing up together, ready to get after it, ready to attack it, ready to get to figure out, you know, what happened. Then you look on the film, as Derek said, you turn on the film and it's not, oh, we can't compete with these guys. Like, why are we even pretending like we can? Which, that's just going to defeat you right off the bat. You're already beaten from a talent perspective, but once you start realizing you're not as good, that just kills you. But they're looking at the tape and going, they're not that, we can play with these guys. This is what they're thinking and what they're seeing. And when I watch the Raiders, I don't see a big talent deficiency. I don't see a big talent gap. I just see a team these last couple of weeks that just hasn't played very good football, number one. And number two, I still think they're trying to get things figured out after losing a huge piece to their puzzle in Henry Ruggs. And I think it was a bright spot to see. I know everyone's going to focus on the outcome of that pass to DeSean Jackson. But if you watch that play, that's what they need more of from him. They were able to connect on that play, and you figure that's a pretty good sign moving forward, because they need to get that kind of a weapon back into the fold, into the mix. That piece of that puzzle that helped everything else with this offense needs to be restored. You're in the Huddle with Vinny Monsignor and Lincoln Kennedy, brought to you by Tequila Embajador, Raider Nation Radio, 920 AM on a Wednesday. Hey guys, it's Vinny B. Raider Nation in the Huddle is all about giving our fans the best opportunities in life. TAT is a new product that allows smokers to enjoy the sensations of smoking with zero tobacco and zero nicotine content. Finally, a cigarette you could feel good about, similar to Raider Nation rituals of winning championships. TAT offers the Beyond Nicotine experience with its Beyond Tobacco-based material in taste, smell, touch, sight, and sound without nicotine or tobacco. TAT offers a better option to completely remove nicotine intake without compromising the smoking experience. TAT, Beyond Tobacco. Raider Nation, get your free pack of TAT today at TriTAT.com.